Welcome to the Service Management Leadership Podcast with Jeffrey Tiefertiller.
Hello, everyone. This is Jeffrey Tiefertiller back with another Service Management Leadership Podcast. I have a great guest for you today, James Moy. Hopefully I pronounced that right, James.
Yep.
James is an IT asset management star. James, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for that introduction.
Oh, James is well-known in the ITAM space. He's with CBS Viacom CBS.
Yes.
And anyway, let's get going. James, I appreciate your time. So you've been in the asset management space for quite a long time. How'd you get down this journey? So the ITAM space, how people get into it, for those of you listening, it's always an interesting story because it's not like, oh, I studied to be an ITAM person in college. You know what I mean? Like, there's always a story. So James, how'd you get going down this path?
So the funny thing is that my college degree is actually in criminal justice, right? So it's definitely not in technology. But I grew up with technology for a long time. My first computer was a Timex Sinclair. Okay. IBM, Atari's, Commodore 64s, did a lot of programming back in the day. Basically my journey started when in the early to late 90s when I got my first job being an inventory specialist and basically managing hardware. And as my roles grew and as I went from company to company, I basically worked on primarily hardware asset management, inventory, procurement, right? And then obviously as the ITAM space grew over the years in the early to late 90s. And as SAM started coming in the early 2000s, everyone started worrying about software. And that's where I turned my attention to software asset management and things in that nature. And then the holistic view of ITIL that brought everything together. But then the ITAM space was very specialized. And that's how I got into it. And then along the journey, of course, the ITAM review and other sources of data of how to manage certain things, and then you learn on the job. So I've been in this space for probably at least 25 years.
Wow. And so that's kind of where I am too. And people don't remember this back then, but back in the 90s, hardware was expensive. And so everybody wanted to track it. And it's kind of bled into how some of our practices are today, where companies get worried about the tracking versus the life cycle. Do you find that to be true as well?
Agree. I totally agree. Most people only track it on an inventory level. Most people still don't understand the life cycle of an asset, whether it's hardware or software, because they're only tracking it for that certain period of time. While in the ITAM space, we track it for the entire life cycle because there's cost implications on one. There's also security implications on the other side. So protecting the data, protecting what's on the hard drive, and everything else that involves the financial cost of that asset.
And when we talk about the life cycle, it's how do we onboard in a standardized, methodical way, track it? Different companies have different steps along that. And how do we decommission hardware or software in a methodical way, right?
Yep, I totally agree with that.
And I only say that because decommissioning is a big thing for people because you can't have your discovery run and find assets that we thought were decommissioned, you know, a year ago, or software we thought we were decommissioned and now we're paying maintenance still on, or something of that nature.
No, that's very true. I hear stories of that. I've been through that, and I'm sure you have too.
Yes, I've seen it up close, and everybody's like, where'd that come from? And I'm like, well, you know, maybe we need to have a better decommissioning process or a better onboarding process. And before we get going on this, onboarding is real interesting. I want to get your take on it. But my view is it takes leadership support to ensure that all hardware and software purchases come through a centralized way, no matter what the centralized way is. It could be procurement, whatever it is, but it takes leadership support to get there.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Ideally, right, once you get your C-level exposure and you get a what I call a champion for ITAM, it helps sets the stage to building out that program methodically and correctly. Yeah. People think that the ITAM and SAM space is basically widget counters, and we're definitely not, because we do so much more. We optimize, we track the life cycle. There's security compliance aspects, both on the hardware and the security side, both for hardware and software. That's one. And then on the procurement side, we try to basically optimize the cost and how much you spend right now. So take, for example, large corporations. If you have all these interdepartments, small departments, or even affiliates that buy hardware and software disparately, then you're not leveraging your buying power. If you combine it, guess what? Hey, you're going to spend a lot less because now you're buying holistically. Think of a Groupon on steroids for a corporation. You know, instead of buying onesie twosie for this affiliate and that affiliate, you combine it as, hey, the parent company buys everything. Guess what? You have more buying power. You can drive your discounts.
And I'm going to take that a step further, James. I won't say nothing's worse, because there's a lot of things worse, but it's very painful to wake up and get this letter in the mail that somebody purchased something 5 years ago, and now you owe back maintenance on something that you never knew you purchased.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I have lived through certain horror stories of where we discover an asset on not the current company, but prior lives, right? Where you discover an asset's in a basement, still wrapped on a skid, brand new, but it's been sitting there for 10 years.
Yeah.
And we've paid maintenance, we paid extended support, and we haven't used it. Now I have to pay someone to get rid of it.
Yes. The good thing, you don't have to worry about wiping those drives.
That's right. It's still brand new.
All right. You've had a lot of experience through a lot of industries. What are some of the unique differences on the hardware side and then the software side in between different industries?
I've worked in a lot of financial firms, a lot of insurance companies, hedge funds, and now a media company. I think there's more scrutiny within the financial firms, because not just for the boards, but primarily Wall Street. And you have stockholders and insurance people that, you know, people that buy the insurance, and there's information there that everyone deals with day in and day out. They may not have access to it, but you're supporting all the other systems that support that, right? So there's more scrutiny in the financial industries, banks, insurance firms, but between hardware and software procurement, between managing hardware and software, I don't see a lot of difference, except more stringent rules within the financial industry. In the media, not as much, but it's basically the same. The trying to control how you buy, trying to control how do you manage, how to leverage your spend and optimize your, what I call the application landscape or software landscape for a company, is massive. And you need to get buy-in from all your stakeholders, whether it's business or the technology owners, to say, hey, I have 500 tools in this space for collaboration. Maybe we should whittle it down to maybe 5 to 10 applications, yeah, versus having everyone going out to say, hey, I like Asana, I like Write, Monday, Smartsheet, or Airtable, or whatever vendor you want to throw in that space, because there's a lot of what I call duplicity in that space. Mm-hmm. And it's usually a UI. It's people who say, introduced to a tool, oh, I like this tool, this really works. But then you look at other tools in that space, you look at Microsoft's offering, you look at other people's offering. They're literally almost the same thing. You just have to decide for the company, where do you want to go?
And they're almost like flavors of ice cream, right? Everybody likes their own.
Like Baskin Robbins.
Oh, man. And as my father would say, the world would be boring if you walked in and they only had vanilla. But that's the same way, because where I found that especially true is like in the BI space. Every organization has at least 5 business intelligence tools. Yep. And they're usually sold with or partnered with one of your bigger companies. You know, and you're like, And you're right, it deals with the UI. Somebody goes to a conference, somebody does this, and they used it in their old organization. And you're like, but do we really need 15 BI tools? You know, do we really need to support that many? And so that's where I've seen similar. I don't know if that's your experience as well.
No, it's literally identical, working on that right now. So so obviously the shift from on-prem to SaaS, right? And especially with the pandemic, everything's going into SaaS because you want to provision faster, right? So you have to get a handle on how you spend on SaaS, either through a contract or through a P-card. I do not like the whole P-card spend or corporate card spend on software because it's just what they call shadow IT and spend that you don't need, especially when you have existing contracts. So definitely get a tool to manage your SaaS publishers so you can understand your utilization, understand your spend, and understand where the expense spend is and drive that to zero.
And even take that a step further, I think there's coming a day very soon that there will be tools that say, you have this type of workload, even in your Amazon, your Azure, whatever, I have these requirements, and it'll spit out, okay, use Azure. Oh, I have these type of requirements, go Amazon or whatever, AWS. But, you know, those companies, they were like, oh, we'll give you a better deal if you're our one, you know, if we're your only one. And,
right.
And, you know, those salespeople, somehow they know to go over the top of the ITAM people and go straight to the C-suite, right? I mean, they're good at that.
Yep.
They're really
good. I totally agree. I mean, that's why I think having the seat at the table helps, right? To drive this, to tell the story and say, it's great to invest in these cloud offerings, but we have to have a way to manage these cloud offerings because anytime you invest in the cloud, you have to understand the metrics and you have to understand how it's being spent. Because if you look at how AWS, Azure get you, right, is you can put data into the cloud, but when you want to export your data out, it costs you money, but it's my data. Why am I paying for my data?
Exactly.
It doesn't make sense.
Exactly. It's Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave.
That's right.
Sorry, an old Eagles song for those of you that may
love the song.
I love it too. But I meant that there may be viewers that are 25, 30 years old that this was a little before their time. And so given the strategic nature of ITAM and Viacom and CBS going through this merger, how has your group helped with that merger? Because ITAM can be very strategic in terms of the hardware side. And, you know, I'm saying this to the viewers and the listeners. Think of having two companies with different, one likes Dell, one likes IBM. Now let's talk about two different softwares. Somebody has SAP ERP, somebody has PeopleSoft, and now we have to merge those. How did you, how is your group enabling that type of merger?
So obviously in any merger, there's always a long phase of consolidation. So luckily, our group has a seat at the table and we partner with our tech vendor management team to drive and assist with that consolidation. So take, for example, on ERPs, they are already having those conversations to figure out where they want to drive it to and towards. As well as for applications. And that goes back to the original conversation we had previously of, hey, we have 25 to, you know, 30 BI tools. Let's have this conversation internally and figure out where you or where the company wants to go and wants to invest in any of these tools that we have in this space. And then drive towards those one to two or three tools that you want to keep. And then we'll take care of the other ones and drive that to zero because you want to invest in these three tools. So obviously the numbers help, right? Spends, usage will drive a lot of that conversation as well as UI and as well as negotiations.
And on that, I'm so glad that you were able to have a seat at the table because I've been the tail to the dog on this where it's thrown over and now you're trying to figure out the contract implications. And it goes with both mergers and divestitures, that there are a lot of contract implications to this. I mean, it's going to take years to get in and out of the right contracts, right?
Yeah, it really depends. And I would agree to that because in past merger acquisitions and divestiture activities, right? If ITAM is not there to provide those what I call headlights, I think ITAM and SAM are usually the headlights of the organization to basically get that type of perspective on software and hardware. Most people, when they talk about those what I call mad activities, you have the lawyers involved, you have certain IT folks involved from an infrastructure, from a client side, but they never talk about, hey, how much software we're getting, what we're divesting, what's going, what's coming, and basically get that view of the full picture of what the risk is, because certain companies you acquire may not be managing their contracts well or not managing their software well. And you're now assuming that risk, which will now be part of the overall parent company. Same thing when you divest, what's going out and what's staying.
So you brought up a point that I think I want to push in a little bit. So we get the cost savings that are gained by the merger and acquisition, but you're also acquiring their risk. You're acquiring even if they got into a bad contract financially, term-wise, you're acquiring that. You're acquiring the good, the bad, and the ugly.
That is correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And I only say that and I push in on that just so everybody knows, you know, on these, they're not easy. These contracts aren't easy because when I've gone through this, some people may have legacy Microsoft and other people O365 and you have to figure out how to, or someone may be on the two different ERPs and now, you know, the architecture and everybody else makes that decision. And now you're trying to figure out even the rich, whichever one's the winner of the ERP, you may not even like that contract and want to redo it because you would have better terms now with more seats, or, you know, it may be on concurrent user and you want it to be on named user or something like that, right?
Yep, agreed. Yeah, it's always about the details in the contract, particularly when you talk about how you measure as well as cost per unit, right? Without the metrics being what I call clearly defined in a contract, you don't know how you're going to do it. So the old adage that I've been using is, if there's ambiguity in your contract, there's money to be made. So you have to have it clearly defined. If I'm buying this license, tell me how you're going to measure it. Tell me how you're going to charge me if you ever come in and audit me, and then, you know, push back on those audit clauses. Get clear definitions, get clear measurements, so you can discover and ascertain your risk, whether you have it or not, but make sure it's in the contract.
Oh, wow. And I'm pushing it even further. Even on these, think about, and I'm saying this to the audience, because some organizations that are either on the recipient with the merger, acquisition, or the divestiture may have better supply chain integration with their HAM. Others may have bad SAM, software asset management, and they are getting audited all the time. And now you're going to get audited because these audit companies think, oh, this company doesn't know what they're doing. And so there's a lot of things at play. Have you come across that?
Yeah, I think I've come across a lot of that in the industry and being in ITAM space for a while, right? So yeah. you do have a lot of people that may do inventory well, just manage, but that, you know, let me take a step back. Inventory meaning just hardware asset management, not doing the full life cycle of ITAM, right? If you get the full life cycle of ITAM, most of the time, you do dive into SAM, or at least basic SAM, right? But if you're only just managing inventory from a provisioning standpoint, then most people are definitely not doing SAM well. Most, like I said, it's getting the software, giving it to the end user, but you're never partnering with those technology areas or those business areas to get the full benefit of what SAM or ITAM can provide. You know, lifecycle management, version control, security and compliance, right? Audit defense. That is the full breadth and width of what ITAM and SAM can do for a company, right? If you think about it, we count, we measure, we optimize, and we give basically visibility into the analytics. So that's the other side of the faucet of ITAM and SAM, where reporting and analytics is huge for the company. When people ask for a report, they say, how much is this user costing me? Well, it depends on what department they are. Depends on what software stack they have. Well, guess what? I think ITAM is now evolving to a space where we're getting to a lot of data analytics in conjunction with AI, right? So what we're building out here at Viacom CBS is a huge data lake, getting information from various tools. In the past, you get a report from this system, you get a report from this system, and then you have to figure out how to merge those data points with some key that matches. And if you don't have a key, good luck. Now, with the data lake, you pull in all your data points, AD, HR, SAM, SAM reporting, SCCM, you name it. Now you just write SQL against it, you're golden. Now you just pull all that data together. You can share that report either ad hoc, or you create reports or create canned reports. And now you can share that with C-level or even executives that will say, hey, this is great stuff.
Right. It's all about, so I think of analytics differently. So I always think in illustrations, and I apologize if that bothers people, but too many times our reports are like snapshots. Yep. If I go to a movie theater and I take a picture of some random movie, I really don't know what's going on. I don't have context. But if I watch the whole movie, now I have I understand how all the pieces are fitting together. So, and to piggyback on what you were saying, Jim Ryan, the CEO of Flexera, when he was on this podcast a couple months ago, he said some companies save up to 30% on their software spend just by initiating this software asset management program. And that 30% doesn't even include the risk saved or gained, you know, to be able to pull those back in. So you've been in the ITAM space a long time. Do you have any fun stories? So people in the ITAM space have great stories. I'm just telling you guys that are listening. Do you have any that you can share that maybe even just cautionary tales?
Yeah, I do have several stories, right? I think one of them is in the SaaS space, particularly. And this is several years ago. About several years ago. And basically what has happened was that, you know, you have all this software spend for your SaaS software. Great stuff, great SaaS. And then we created this contract, not us, but someone else created this contract, and everyone's on board enterprise-wide. And then all of a sudden, you know, coming for renewal, you know, you have, you know, we're spending X amount, you know, a couple of million dollars or whatever, a very large contract. And all of a sudden they come in to say, hey, what about these folks? And this is before SaaS tooling was around, right? Everyone back in the old days was wondering, they were trying to figure out how much are we spending? And you can never tell, right? And now the vendor comes back and says, hey, you have a bunch of this other subsidiary spending all this money somewhere else on our stuff, but they're not part of your contract. And like, but that's your fault, not us. And it is partially our fault too, right? Because they didn't clamp down on that procurement. So we had to like merge all this stuff. People had to talk to people internally to drive that SaaS spend on a procurement card or a expense card to zero and put them on a contract where, you know, you had to negotiate run rates, negotiated pricing, where the other people were spending literally on, you know, retail website price.
Oh, yeah.
That's one. So that's SaaS spend. Hardware is probably a little bit more challenging, but remember when mobile devices, when companies were providing phones and stuff like that. So one of the stories was our senior managers had us inventory all the phones in our storage room on the weekend of St. Patrick's Day. It was hilarious. It was just myself and another guy just inventorying phones, and we're staring at this like, why are we doing this on St. Patrick's weekend in New York City when there's a St. Patrick's parade literally outside? We should be out there.
People don't realize that don't live in New York City what that St. Patty's Day parade looks like. I made the mistake maybe a decade ago of flying the family on spring break to New York City. We're in a cab, and it takes us 30 minutes to cross a road because this St. Patty's Day parade is going. And the cabbie, you would think that they would be like, oh, we know a way around there. But they're happy hitting the tourists for the extended taxi bill. Yep. But anyway, that was before Uber and Lyft and everything else.
That's so right.
On those, what's really interesting as well is how we've matured, right? Because our stories now, 5 years from now, imagine the stories you're going to tell about how, you know, how crazy things were back in 2020. Because let me ask you this, and it's a little bit off script, but were you all licensed correctly for people to be able to work remotely? I know some organizations weren't licensed well for VPN, and it was a challenge, or, you know, VDI or whatever it is.
Yeah, so the good thing about the organization is that we were very well licensed, well positioned prior to the pandemic, and offering working remotely was not a hard thing, right? Obviously, certain publishers and vendors were very easy to work with, especially during the pandemic, where they say, hey, we can give you these licenses, we're not gonna charge you. But you know, that short-lived goodwill always ends, right? So certain publishers are more amicable to work with, while others are slightly difficult, right? So really it's publisher oriented, and it depends on your relationship with your account rep and that company. So, you know, it could be adversarial, it could be a real good strategic vendor. So I always try to get to a good working relationship with every publisher, but it doesn't work out that way sometimes, right?
Yeah, and I only threw that out because I know some organizations are really struggling with that because they, you know, weren't licensed. You know, they had everybody mandated to the office, and now they have thousands of people working remotely, and it changes some of the software intricacies. So you've been in this space a long time. What has been some of the big changes on the hardware side and the software side that you've seen over the years?
So on the hardware side, let's talk about that. In the past, right, it used to be certain workstation support or client services, right? They will normally manage the hardware, right? But without ITAM being at the seat of the table, it basically, they're managing it both on a tech perspective and an inventory perspective. And the first question you should ask yourself is, are these guys knowledgeable enough to manage the inventory? Probably not, because these guys, you hired the group, the team, the tech folks to manage tech, help them doing installations, doing the technical work, which they are very smart at doing. They don't have to manage the inventory. ITAM can manage the inventory and provision for you. We can also work with resellers or vendors to say, hey, we could set up a warehouse and we could do the imaging for you. We just need you to ship it and you just do all the other configurations with a remote tool. Particularly with the pandemic, where, you know, a lot of things are happening where it's what you call zero touch deployments, where you get a reseller or a manufacturer to say, hey, we want to stock, you know, 500 machines, get them imaged, right? And then ship them out to the end user for replacement or refresh. And then the technician will log into the computer or do some automated script, download the other software stack that person particularly needs, right? So I think that is evolving primarily because of the pandemic, and where we can provision faster, where, you know, certain lead times to get a machine. So let's say when you onboard a person, it takes 2 to 3 weeks to onboard and get the hardware, get everything set up. Now you can provision a lot faster. Right, that's one. Software, definitely a shift from on-prem to SaaS. But like we talked about before, you have to manage your SaaS well. particularly from on-prem to SaaS. So let's say you're going from on-prem server, you know, managed data centers, where we were in the data center business where people or companies has invested in a data center footprint. Now they're getting out. Now there's co-locations. Now there's AWS, Azure, GCP. And we don't want to be in that space anymore. So when you move from on-prem to SaaS or the cloud, which is literally leasing, you have to be very aware of your licenses going in, whether you're doing BYOL or you're buying through a marketplace, whether it's AWS or Azure, because that changes your licensing, especially when you move. And then obviously managing SaaS application and software within that space is also another caveat and paradigm that people need to be aware of.
So there's several things in there to unpack, and let me follow up with one at a time. So one of the things that I think people misunderstand about the advantages of HAM is if I buy 500 laptops, like you said, and I go stick them in my warehouse and we're going to deploy them over 3 months and they're already going to have a Microsoft license. So I'm paying double licensing for those 3 months for the ones in the field and these, and I may have a 36-month depreciation schedule, and I've already lost almost 10% of that by them sitting in inventory. So this integration in the supply chain is saving, plus you have a better user experience. Did I wrap that well, or?
Yeah, no, you captured it, right? So the ideal process would be they're just keeping the hardware, right? And then obviously through the contract negotiations with that warehouse or that reseller, what I call the clock doesn't start ticking until it ships, right? And we don't image the machine and let it sit and then ship. No, we don't do that, because what I've seen in that process that you'll image, it sits there for a couple of months. And in between those couple of months, there's Microsoft patches, there's other software application patches that go out and you don't get it. So ideally you want to image the day you ship and then push it out and then send it, because what happens that the end user gets it, launches it, and then when you connect the internet, there's like five other patches that come down, and then you're sitting there for another 2 hours waiting for the update to happen.
Especially
you want to avoid all of that.
On your first day of work, you're like, what? You know, you know, I mean, you issued this laptop and you go sit and it's just spinning.
Yep.
And that's a great point on the risk side. And on the SAM, there's so many cascading implications. You talked about, let's move our servers to the cloud, but that has database implications, right?
Yes, absolutely. Database, SQL and Oracle. Ooh.
Yes. We're coming up on Thanksgiving week. So those of you all that have ITAM friends and family that you're going to virtually see, don't mention any of the database, SQL or Oracle, that they won't have very much to be thankful for. Sorry. So the other thing I think in SAM is the understanding of the costs. You know what I mean? Like 10, 15 years ago, we knew it was expensive, but now we're like, okay, how do we get a handle on things that we normally, you know, hadn't in the past, because they see it as a value to be gained. Have you seen that as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's an old adage I always use when talking about software licensing, right? And it's happened more this year because of the loss of revenue, the pandemic, and that adage is basically, if there's ambiguity in your contracts or in software licensing, there's money to be made. So take, for example, ServiceNow, Microsoft, Oracle, SAP, Adobe, the big five, as I call them, right? They've changed their licensing this year a lot, many times. So Microsoft in the last 8 months has changed their licensing for all their SKUs. It used to be one product, now it's 3, 4, 5 products. ServiceNow, last year, they changed their ITSA SKU into pro or basic or whatever, right? Whatever their SKUs. And then let's not mention Oracle, IBM, and SAP. They're constantly changing their SKUs just to, you know, monetize, because like I said, ambiguity promotes profits, right? That is why the biggest pet peeve I have, and probably you have, is that if you don't get correct measurements defined in your contract and understand your licensing terms, you are going to be at the mercy of those publishers.
Forever.
Forever.
Because they're not going to let you have nicer terms later.
Correct.
I mean, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but if they have you over a barrel, they're not going to go, you know what? You're right. You know what I mean? They're not going to go there.
I've never heard a publisher say that to me.
And it's how to maximize them. How are you and your group adapting and incorporating new technologies like AI and RPA or whatever it is?
So we're looking into it a lot, particularly on the automation space, both for onboarding, provisioning, and reharvesting and offboarding certain applications. So we do a lot of scanning. So we're heavily reviewing and investing in that automation. But we're at the basic stage. We're trying to grow the program within the company. So we're about maybe two or three years away to getting that full-fledged AI type work that we need. So it's going to be invested with the data lake, with the certain discovery tools that we're investing in. So yeah, so we're definitely investing in it and researching it.
I understand. And I will tell you one opportunity that I've seen up close. And that is like on ServiceNow or other ITAM, not picking or promoting anyone, tools, they will show green. I tell this story often. When I was at a certain company, we had an Adobe title that had showed green. I'm like, great. It says you've bought 17 and you've used zero. I'm like, that's not great. You know, that means I should be able to leverage those 17 unused that we're not using into a better deal somewhere else. And I would think there's some automation to, and I use this phrase often, use what you're paying for and pay for what you use. You know, it's a balancing scale. And there's automation to say it's green, you know, but we need to take a closer look to make sure that's in our strategic alignment.
I totally agree with that. Definitely, I totally agree with that, because with software, well, it's not even just software, it's in life. So let's say you're buying stuff for your house, right? And you're buying groceries. You always buy what you need, and whatever's in your fridge, you might want to use it before the expiration date because you're going to waste it, right? Same thing applies in the software world and the hardware world. And that statement that you said is totally 1,000% true. Pay for what you want to use, all right? And basically use what you have.
Yes. And you mentioned going to the grocery store. It made me think of another illustration. People, your leaders that go to conferences are like going to the grocery store when you're hungry. You always buy and promise too much. You know what I mean? Those leaders that go to these conferences, they get sold on something. They come back and you're like, we don't need that. We already have this other. It's like going to the grocery store and you're like, you know, that really does look good. Why don't I get that? And you come home and you have three of them in the freezer or something, you know? And anyway, I think in illustrations. So as you peer into your crystal ball, you have so those of us with a long track record, a long runway, you peer into your crystal ball and you think, what's next on the hardware and also software? What's on that? What's coming up? You know, what do you think? What do you think's coming in the hardware space and the software space, both to, as opportunities, but you know, from a SWAT sort of way, but also as a threat?
I think both on the hardware and software side, as the pandemic numbers are growing and as we continue to live in this new world, right? A lot of things will be invested in SaaS, right, for one. And obviously everyone is spending wildly in that space. The tools that are currently in that space all claim that they can do SaaS measurements, you know, pull the data through an API, everything else. That's all wonderful and great. The biggest caveat to that area, whether it's on-prem or even in the SaaS, you have to have a team to manage it, right? And what I mentioned earlier is you're integrating your SaaS accounts payable spend and your expense tool spend into that tool will give you insights beyond what you can even think of, right? And obviously the other thing is getting a good business intelligence or analytics tool that you can pull in multiple data points, basically the data lake we talked about. Once you get a data lake, all your sources of data, you don't have to maintain. It's coming from a different source, but you can query all that data and make it into one report. So I think SAM and ITAM is gonna dive into data warehouse as a service primarily for data lakes. And that will evolve a lot more over a year or 2 years, because we're gonna need that, because there's gonna be so much more data because of the SaaS world. Because I think we're average company is spending at least close to $2 to $3 million or more, depending on how much SaaS you have. And any one company can probably have almost 300 or 400 SaaS vendors, literally.
Yes.
So automation will be big. Zero touch deployments, both for hardware and software, is pretty much here to stay. And obviously the biggest one is, guess what? You can work remotely. This new world has proved it, right? You just need to get the analytics to make sure that those people are working. That you know, that's a given, right? But at the same time, I think automation is going to be key. Business analytics reporting is a key for the ITAM space, and I think getting new, fresh blood into our world, more people into this space, because it's a growing industry. It's grown since we've been in it over 25 years. And like I said, it's grown from, we're going to count widgets, 1, 2, 3, 4, to, hey, we can optimize your costs, your spend, how you buy, how you use it, and track it from both a security and compliance view. So
yeah,
that's what I see on the horizon for this industry.
Yes. And you brought up a couple of really key things. With everybody focused on finance because of this world we live in, hopefully ITAM will have a better seat, bigger seat at the table to be able to influence some of the decisions that help save organizations money.
Yep, totally agree.
Hopefully. So when we had Jim Ryan on, he talked about the convergence of SAM and ITSM and cloud and SAM. And we talked a lot about in this conversation that, you know, the SAM and cloud coming together as people move from on-prem to the cloud. But are you seeing this convergence between IT service management and software asset management?
I do and I don't. And this is where it bleeds, right? So ITSM, right, all about service management, you know, problem, change, incident, all that fun stuff, right? And you look at the platforms that are available, ServiceNow, Remedy, the old Peregrine system, which is now OpenText or Micro Focus, whatever you want to call them now. They have their core benefits, right? And now everyone's trying to get into SAM because, hey, guess what? SAM is a practice that people ought to use, ought to do, because there's optimization. There's millions of, there's dollars to be saved, right? And I do see it bleeding in, but I think they're getting away from their bread and butter. So, but software does have a space in there. I just don't, it will blend in, but I think SAM stays in its own lane and affects ITSM and not the other way around. Because SAM and ITAM in general drives everything else. So think about when you look at ITIL and SAM, you have, to me, you have the CMDB, you have SAM and HAM right there on top of the CMDB. But before you have the CMDB, guess what you have? You have HAM and SAM.
Yeah.
It literally makes up your applications, your hardware, your relationships within that CMDB. So without HAM and SAM, you don't have CMDB, even though your CMDB is foundational. So
yeah, that's an interesting perspective. And let me push in on a couple of things. First of all, the same discovery tool for most companies discovers both all HAM, SAM, and CMDB. So let's put that out there. The other thing and this is a U.S. centric comment, and I don't mean it inflammatory to anyone, but in the UK and Europe and Asia, they've gone from process and then an emphasis on tool, and now they're back on process. How do we, you know, tie everything together? Here in the U.S., we went from process, and now we're so tool heavy on both service management and SAM. That's my viewpoint. I would like your perspective as well. But we haven't figured out how to tie it all together. We just let the tool do its stuff.
Well, but I would agree with you. Everyone thinks that when you buy a silver bullet tool, they think that will fix the process, which is incorrect. And being in this space for a while, as well as everyone that listens, right? It's people, process, and technology, right? And I think we have to start at what are you trying to solve, right? And I think the best way to address a lot of those questions is look at the framework that has been out there. Look at ISO 197007, right? Look at the ITAM framework, start there and ask yourself what you need to solve for the company and not just solve for one area or one problem. Look at it, step back and think about it holistically, not from a project point of view, but overall. Map out your 3-5 year plan for ITAM or SAM and where you want to get to. But I think the starting point is the framework, right? Where you have ISO, and that will give you a good baseline and a foundation of how everything intersects. Because without the people to do the work, without the process that other people follow and the technology that it will enable those two other things, you can't do a lot, right? And obviously, when you have those three things working in conjunction with each other, sky's the limit.
Yes. And the reason I say that is I know companies that just turn on the tool and don't have any like context that they look through. And I posit this out that a company that does everything manually, pulls data from SCCM, could be further along without a tool than those that are tool only, you know, which is crazy to think about.
No, I totally agree with you. We've seen that in many cases.
Yes, but people don't want to hear that.
They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it because they think I get it. Everyone has their own view of certain things, right? But we've proved time and time again that we can give you the visibility, help you manage, optimize, and basically course correct the corporation and how you approach assets in general.
Yes, because even when you do these contract renewals, somebody's got to go update them in the tool that does your reconciliation. I mean, there's this people aspect in terms of understanding the contractual implications and adjusting, you know, that's got to be there. So yep. As we start wrapping up, we mentioned work from home. Has there been any other COVID implications for you?
No, not really. I mean, there aside from work from home, there's just been a lot of work with the consolidation and the merger and stuff like that. Obviously, the consolidation has taken a lot of time because of certain publishers and certain areas. But no, other than that, it's just literally work from home.
that coming during a merger is a big deal. You know, I mean, just because it's added another layer of complexity. And last question, and I ask everybody this last question. If you were given the resources to invest, knowing what you know, what would you invest in thinking and knowing it'd give the biggest bang for your buck?
I would definitely invest in a software tool, both for on-prem and for SaaS, that will definitely get you visibility into everything that is being spent from a AP and expense side, as well as having the tool and the AI to basically say, hey, haven't used it in 90 days, let's reclaim the license and have that automation all set and done. Because in the past, right, used to be done by client services or a tech team, you have to go to the person, uninstall. Now it's automated. Now you can do it automated. You could save so much money, so much time, not just the price of the tool, but time spent doing that type of work, you know, where you used to send a technician. Now it's automated through a tool and you save so much money that way.
So the reharvesting or reclaiming licenses And even the, you mentioned the automation, some will have a dashboard and say you haven't used it in 90 days or, you know, but it still takes that person to do the interpretation. Yep. And all that. Well, James, we thank you for being on our podcast. We'd love to have you back, you know, sometime maybe next year. And
that'd be great.
Hope you have a great Thanksgiving holiday, and you don't have to look through contracts too much over it.
Well, you have a great Thanksgiving, Jeffrey. Thank you for inviting me to this podcast, and I look forward for the next time.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
All right, you take care.
We'll be back with Jeffrey's closing thoughts. Hello, everyone. This is Jeffrey back with closing thoughts. We thank James for his time. What an awesome guest he is with his experience in the IT asset management world for many years. And so we've learned a few things, haven't we? Just from him and our previous guests. And one is the transition through a merger, acquisition, even a divestiture where we spin off another company has IT asset management implications. We didn't get too deep into it in this podcast with James, but I want you to know that that's a huge issue. IT asset management can be strategic in terms of saving money or bringing parties together on all sides onto a common platform, common understanding. For example, think about if you bring two companies together and they're using different suppliers, different supply chains, even different laptop OSs, all that stuff. And now we have to merge them together. Big deal. Same with software asset management. Think about your contractual obligations if somebody has SAP ERP and somebody else has PeopleSoft. Now we have to contractually bring those together and figure out, have a seat at the table with the architecture team and say, okay, I understand where you're trying to go. Let's try to figure out these contracts and make them advantageous to our organization. And so very, very strategic. That's the first point. The second, and our final point that I want to layer in here is, even if your company is not going through this type of organizational change, IT asset management is strategic. It helps save money, helps lower risk. And those are the two things that are driving most organizations at this time. So we thank you for listening. Thank you for watching this podcast. It's been a tough year for many. And so there's something I can do or we can do at Service Management Leadership for you, let me know. I'm always around. I answer a lot of questions, and I'm happy to help. But on a formal note, if Service Management Leadership can help guide your organization through these types of situations, even if they're subtly or a lot different in the IT asset management space, service management space, process, people, technology sides, or business continuity, please let me know. We would love to help you and your organization anytime. And I hope you have a great, great day.